Since we finished the Old Testament letter book called Ruth, four chapters, we've decided we'll focus on a book in the New Testament, one of the Gospels, Luke. We haven't spoken from Luke for a long time in terms of a series, so that's where we'll be focusing. Some of it we've covered over Christmas, because that's one of the natural places we look at for understanding about what Christmas is about. Luke carries the most of the story about the birth. There is bits in Matthew, particularly, but we're going to be working through Luke. Hope you appreciate that. I personally find Luke the most challenging of the gospel. I like it, but it's the one that I find most uncomfortable. Maybe I'll tell you why as we go along. See what you think. It's got some great stories in Luke. There's particular parables and stories that aren't contained in John or the others, which are called the Synoptic, the Matthew, Mark, and Luke. Parable of Good Samaritan, the story of the lost things. There's some particular things unique in Luke. We're going to have a little series. I want to read Luke chapter 1. Verses 1 to 4, and then pick up in chapter 2, verse 41. So the opening words, the introduction to the gospel, which means good news, still is the gospel. Many have undertaken to draw up an account of the things that have been fulfilled among us, just as they were handed down to us by those who from the first were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. With this in mind, since I myself have carefully investigated everything from the beginning, I, too, decided to write an orderly account for you. Most excellent Theophilus, so that you may know the certainty of the things you have been taught. Jesus made a splash. Many were telling about Jesus and his story. We have the collection of Matthew and Mark and John being the latest that was kind of written and gathered together by the end of the first century. The synoptics earlier, Mark probably the first, but Luke as a friend of Paul, a traveling companion of Paul, that Luke is part one, Acts is part two, seen as kind of a continuation of the story of God at work. Many were eyewitnesses and servants of the word. And he's put together an orderly account. I like that. If you like ordered things, you'll like Luke. I like ordered things, so I like Luke. It's good to know a beginning, a middle, and an end. Lots of insight. It's written more towards a non-Jewish community. Matthew particularly is writing. There's lots of idiom and ideas created and hung around the Jewish faith. Luke is seeking to write to anyone, everyone. And he uses this name. It's not to exclude you. It might have been to a particular person called Theophilus. What a great name. When we think of Lenny Henry, maybe, if you remember that era. some do. It could be to someone called Theophilus. Or it could be a code word or a name that incorporates many. Because, as you probably recognize, the second part of Theophilus' name, Philus, comes from the word philia, meaning love. And Theo is a Greek word for God. So it may be that this is for someone who would seek to love God or does love God and to be the basis for their faith. It's an orderly account about Jesus. So let's turn to chapter 2, verse 41 to 52. Every year, Jesus' parents went to Jerusalem for the festival of the Passover. When he was 12 years old, they went up to the festival according to the custom. After the festival was over, while his parents were returning home, the boy Jesus stayed behind in Jerusalem, but they were unaware of it. Thinking he was in their company, they traveled for a day. Then they began looking for him among their relatives and friends, and they didn't find him. They went back to Jerusalem to look for him. After 3 days, they found him in the temple courts, sitting among the teachers, listening to them and asking them questions. Everyone who heard him was amazed at his understanding and his answers. When his parents saw him, they were astonished. His mother said to him, "Son, why have you treated us like this?" I'm interpreting how that phraseology went. I don't know. You know, tone makes a lot, doesn't it? "Son, why have you treated us like this? Your father and I have been anxiously searching for you." "Why were you searching for me?" he asked. "Didn't you know I had to be in my father's house?" But they did not understand what he was saying to them. Then he went down to Nazareth with them and was obedient to them. But his mother treasured all these things in her heart. And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature and in favor with God and man. Parents' worst nightmare. Most parents have got one. When I lost, down the beach, down the high street, in the supermarket. Have you got yours? You'll probably tell me at the door. I've not yet heard anyone who said, "I didn't find them." They were lost and who knows where they've got to. And I'm not making light of that. It would be a dreadful thing. You can imagine in a culture every year going up to Jerusalem with hundreds of thousands of people, commitment. It locates this time in March, April of the year, the seasons. As people go to celebrate Passover, that wonderful celebration and remembrance and testifying key moment of when God called his people together. They know about rescue and redemption and the goodness of God and overthrowing the enemies and setting the people free. And it all going so well, and lots of people have traveled from the villages and the towns, and including now we know that Mary and Joseph and family have come from the north, from near Galilee, up in the mountains. Nazareth, they've come down to Jerusalem in the south with many, many others. And they celebrate Passover. They've come with friends, family, neighbors, the community, a commitment of their worship. And in that going and in the hustle and bustle and you know, they wouldn't be in their cars on the motorway, maybe walking slow, there are lots of people. And Jesus is about 12 and he's with his friends and family. And it takes them a day to notice. You know, that we can make judgments, can't we, about Mary and Joseph. Joseph's still alive at this point. You know, more tut-tut, bad parents. You know, how do you know? Where do you know your son is? But they don't notice. It takes a day, and suddenly they're aware that Jesus isn't there. It takes a day of travel. They think, well, gosh, he's not here. They search. They're desperate. And they then think, we'll go back for a day. It takes a journey back. Maybe they were slightly faster on the return back to Jerusalem, but against the crowds. And then it takes them a day looking, searching, maybe a growing desperation. And eventually they find Jesus. It's a telling little story. It's the only one in the Gospels that records something between the birth and the baby Jesus. And maybe we know him up to being a toddler, probably about 2 years old potentially, when Herod chases down and murders so many babies in Bethlehem. They fled to Egypt. At some point, Herod dies. They come back from Egypt and settle not in Bethlehem near Jerusalem, but north, Nazareth. And then over the passage of time and years, we discover Jesus at 12. And then we don't hear much about Jesus until he's around 30. And yet, Luke records and holds this little encounter about Jesus at 12 at Passover in Jerusalem. And it's full, not only of emotion, but profound insights. Luke records a little bit of his biography, a little bit of the story, lifts the veil and think, what happened for so long from baby Jesus and shepherds and angels and rushing away under threat of death to Egypt and then back? What happens? What was Jesus like as a teenager? Not quite a teenager yet. You know, we know what Harry Enfield's take is on teenagers. What was Jesus like? It's important that we know about Jesus at this age. He didn't just parachute in at 30. He didn't just magically appear from a parallel universe like superheroes do. He was one of us, flesh and blood, growing, living, learning. I don't know if you heard it, but there's something going on in this story about Mary. Mary features a great deal in the whole of Luke, but also especially in these opening sections of this story, the gospel. Indeed, it seems that Luke is relying on Mary later on in life as he gathers together this orderly account and of the story and to write it down for the lovers of God, those seekers. So much must have come from Mary. Maybe others, but we know by this point, later between Jesus' teenage life and his adult ministry, Joseph, his dad, has died. But Mary remembers. Did you hear it in the reading? In verse 51, they went back to Nazareth and was obedient to them, but his mother, that's Mary, treasured all these things in her heart, pondered them. That Mary is the eyewitness to this story, always was. She knew the details at the manger and the annunciation by Gabriel as it told you will bear a child and you'll call him Jesus. That there is this sense of her pondering and noting and reflecting and holding specially these events in the whirlwind of the circumstances of forces at work, and Mary and Joseph in the midst of the beautiful scenes we've celebrated at Christmas. The whirlwind of Jesus' birth and all that happens. And then 12 years later, still. Long gone are the angels and the shepherds and the journey to Egypt and back and the miracles and the pregnancy. And there's God doing something. 12 years later passes. The Mary is there, remembering. She's recounted for us in an eyewitness detail, certain, historical, earthy, based in living, the type of clothing that Jesus was given at his birth, where he was placed in a manger, in the animal feeding trough, of who came, of what gifts were brought, and Mary treasured in her heart. These things occurred but weren't forgotten. In this story, she treasured these things, all these things, in her heart. Treasured. Do you ever remember the story Treasure Island? Robert Louis Stevenson. Maybe you know some of the characters. Long John Silver, Jim Hawkins. They go on this adventure and they've got this funny little map. And they know at the end of the map, if they can find it, is a treasure so precious, but someone has hidden it because they think someone's going to steal it. And so they make this obscure map with kind of ambiguous clues, and they set off this adventure because they know that somewhere in a box buried is something of great worth, and they go through all sorts of adventures. So often we take these things that are of great value to us, a precious heirloom, something passed on to us from our parents or grandparents, something we've happened to acquire along the way, and it's of great value, and we tend to be really, really protective of it. If you've got something of a very great value, I'm told, I don't have one, just so to make it clear. People put them in the bank, in the safety deposit box. And in order to get access, you need a key and a code, an ID, and you have to go through doors and locks and surveillance and security to get to the most precious thing, the treasure. Or if you've been to the Tower of London on that funny little moving platform that takes you past the crown jewels. And you go, ah, there. And there's beef eaters and everyone in there, all their things and security and all that. It's there, but it's inaccessible. That's not what this word treasured means. That Mary isn't treasuring these things, in other words, locking them up and hiding them away and putting them far beyond the reach, because they're too precious. This word means something else, and it's cropped up twice in this chapter. Back in verse 19, around the birth, the shepherds have come, verse 16, so they hurried off and found Mary and Joseph and the baby who was lying in the manger. Remember that? That was last month. When they'd seen him, they spread the word concerning what had been told them about this child, and all who heard it were amazed at what the shepherds had said to them. Verse 19, but Mary treasured up all these things and pondered them in her heart. The meaning of this word that Luke has chosen, the meaning of treasured here is to keep carefully, to keep it safe, protected, not out of reach and hidden away and no one can access, but not forgotten or not lost. The Mary recognizes these things are so precious, so monumental, nothing like this has ever happened, so important that she treasures them, she keeps them safe, they are not forgotten, she keeps in her mind knowing that these details matter because this baby matters, because God has announced it and done a great thing in her life, and she knows the impact is global. Just read her song, it's called the Magnificat. In the story, she treasures these details and ponders them. The shepherds had come from the fields in the night and they'd worshipped this baby. She kept that in her heart. She treasured it. She held on to it. She thought, wow, and pondered it. What can this mean? Although she had an insight because the angel had declared. And now they're in the temple, having had a rushed journey back to find him. And they see Jesus talking and interacting and answering questions and asking questions. And people are amazed. And she treasures this too. I don't think she's treasuring the fact that she lost him, although she does. And maybe that's part of the thing. I've lost Jesus. I mean, you've had the Annunciation. When's the angel going to come up and tell me off? I've lost Jesus. But something more profound. This takes place in the temple. The temple is a key place in Luke. Remember just the other week we heard that at 12 days old, Jesus is what? Presented at the temple. That the temple is at the heart of the religious life of Israel. It's that central place in Jerusalem where the king was meant to be. By this point, the kings had vanished 500 years or so before. And yet there was that yearning and that hope. And God, restore your honor, your fame, bring back life to this people. That place of worship and of sacrifice, of encounter, of the place that they knew the very presence of God would dwell in, the Holy of Holies. The place on pilgrimage at Passover again and again, at least three times a year, in the journey up the hills, the songs of ascent of the Psalms to the rhythm and the contours of the nation's life, ideally at least. It matters, this place. And Luke begins and he ends his gospel with the temple. Even Acts starts in the temple. Luke 1:9, about Zechariah, dad of John the Baptist. He was chosen by lot according to the custom of the priesthood to go into the temple of the Lord and to burn incense. Luke 1:21, while people were waiting for Zechariah and wondering why he stayed so long in the temple. And then at the end in chapter 23:45. For the sun stopped shining and the curtain of the temple was torn in two. And they stayed continually, 24:53. They stayed continually at the temple praising God. Many, many encounters of the temple through Luke. The temple matters to him. We've just heard of how Jesus was dedicated at the temple and consecrated to God at 12 days old. but there's something in his life now as a 12-year-old that it moves beyond it was done to him. He was taken there to fulfill all the law rightly. But in verse 49, Jesus responds to his parents, "Why are you searching for me?" he asked. "Didn't you know I had to be in my Father's house?" There's the obvious thing of the hurt that perhaps Joseph particularly felt. The dad, not biological, they know that, but Joseph has been the one who has provided and raised and trained, and we know Jesus was taught in the professions of Joseph, the skills. "Don't you know that we've been searching for your parents? We've been anxious. I'm here in my Father's house." Mary's always known this. Joseph's always known that this child is theirs, but also the Son of God. It's quite easy to slip into the familiar and forget the extraordinary, to forget the big call and purpose, because we're living in the day-to-day, the ordinary. We live in the routine, don't we? And forget the greater, the plan, the trajectory and focus and direction of God in history. It was 12 years ago with all those shepherds and angels and the wise men and the gifts. But something's taken place in Jesus. His growing awareness and his obedience to his family and the culture and the law, fulfilling everything. But this growing awareness, I'm in my Father's house. One of the things we'll see with Luke is how much there are some deep resonances, and how much Jesus fleshes out and gives body to, and the whole kind of body of the Old Testament has been sort of setting the framework. It's been like this magma bubbling up underground and kind of like suddenly bursts forth into the fullness of Jesus. But we kind of see in Luke what he says. You may not have picked it up. I didn't, but some commentators helped me, if you think I'm so smart. Not really. There are books and people who do this for a living, and writing and studying, that the very phrase at the end in 2:26, sorry, in verse 2:52, "And Jesus grew in wisdom and stature in the favor with God and man," is a very similar phraseology to what happened with Samuel. Remember Samuel, Old Testament? A couple of books named after him. Samuel was born to Hannah and was in the temple, given over, dedicated to be in the temple. And in 1 Samuel 2:26 says this, "And the boy Samuel continued to grow in stature and favor with the Lord and with people." Very similar. Not accidental. Luke has this beautiful way of drawing from the Old Testament and saying, look, see how that began and this completes, that Jesus fulfills and completes and fleshes out and demonstrates all that has been set in motion, he now brings to fulfillment. We talked about Samuel as the judge, as the faithful in times of difficulty and oppression, where Samuel is raised up as the last judge. Of Moses, we're told in Luke's gospel that Jesus is like the new Moses, not only a prophet, but a very great friend of God, and who brings to fulfillment the law. Of David, we're told that Jesus now is the king, the son of God, in ways that are far beyond that of King David or King Solomon. He's pictured a little bit like Elijah, but greater than. Elijah was a miracle worker and a prophet and a man of God. How much more Jesus? Lest we get unbalanced in our view, Luke is very clear to say Jesus is also like Jonah. A prophet, yes, a proclaimer of the judgment of God, but also a suffering prophet. We know that Jesus comes as a suffering servant. And Mary treasures, keeps these things safe, doesn't forget them. She ponders, she reflects, she accurately remembers and holds these things as precious. To preserve these things from perishing or being lost, she knows. She treasures the truth. And now with Luke, lays them out for us all. The God had entrusted Mary with the precious revelation of himself and his son to this young woman. And Mary treasures it, holds that. And through her faithfulness, lets us see and behold and take hold of this truth. I love how Mary is also one of the disciples. She's there all the way through. I love how Mary is a wonderful role model to us. She ponders and meditates this treasure that has been given and keeps it safe. Something of the disciple, something for all of us, that ponders, that takes hold, that internalizes, that makes in oneself this truth that we have behold, we know of the great value of it, that we take it and absorb it and hold on to it and learn it and not forget it, because it matters. That we have been included and incorporated and entrusted with this wonderful gospel truth. We've come to a knowledge of Jesus and we hold on to that. It's internal. Paul talks about how faith is a matter of the heart and of proclamation. Sometimes you may think, why do we sit through these long-winded sermons with words and ideas and concepts? Because these things matter. And our hope for Phil and I and all those of others who teach is that we share something of the wonderful value, the preciousness, the awesomeness, the hopefulness, the faith-building truth of Jesus, such that you would ponder and go, wow. And go, yeah, I'm included. This is my story. This is my life change. This is something that no one can take away from me because I've come to know the Savior myself. Our precious believers in parts of the world know that they can take life, but they can't take faith from us. They can do dreadful things, but it's something that is unrobbable. I mean, you can forget it. You can doubt it. You can throw it away, but no one can take it from you. Sister and brother, ponder, meditate, reflect, read, treasure, keep safe. All the things about Jesus. Mary is a proclaimer too. She has walked 500 miles and more. Thank you. That just came to me then. I didn't script that. You're now wondering what? I wasn't paying attention. Alex, could someone just, Chris, could you just turn the buzzer off? I can just hear it. It sounds, yeah, I think Chris does. She's a proclaimer. She is a wonderful role model. She ponders, she knows, and she also tells of our experience, of our story, of the wonders of Jesus. And she points us, and Jesus points us to this growing truth that Jesus begins to understand that of his special relationship, his unique relationship with the Father. I am in my Father's house. He understands Father's sonship, this amazing truth about who Jesus is eternally as the beloved Son. Wonderful. And in this truth of who we're being called, of what Luke is stirring for those who are hearing, there's the beginnings of something he will develop, and it's a little bit pointy and sharp and uncomfortable. Mary and Joseph come to him and say, "Don't you, we've been so anxious. Where were you? Didn't you know we'd be tearing our hair out? And if we had mobile phones, we'd been calling everyone we knew. Maybe find my friend," you know, like, I didn't have that. They were like, where are you? We love you. Where are you? Don't you know I needed to be in my father's house? There's an ouch in that, isn't there? And that ouch, we all feel. Because part of the call of Jesus and what he will go on to talk about is to call people to follow him. And in following him, there is a leaving and an embracing. There is a turning away and to Jesus. The disciples had to leave their nets and follow Jesus. That there's a kind of sharp moment where the family come to Jesus and say, "Oh, what are you doing? Everyone's in a commotion. Come and just come home and settle down and stop being so annoying or so provoking or so controversial." And Jesus says, "Who are my family? Those that love God." You've got to love God, he says, the Father, with all your heart, soul, mind, and strength, and hate your family. He's not overturning the Ten Commandments, but he's saying, what comes first is God. And this hits the road so profoundly with those closest to us. Those who love us and those who care for us and those who want the best for us sometimes get that mixed up, because actually we follow the Father, we follow Jesus in the inspiration of the Spirit, and his call upon each one of us is to put him first in marriage, in parenting, in grandparenting, in business, in life, in pensions, in how you raise your children, in every aspect of life, of what is prioritized. Jesus comes first. And sometimes people don't get it. When God raises up and says, will you go overseas? I know for Pete and Karen, I don't know if they're here, they may be or not. In sending Rebecca, it's costly, isn't it? Overseas. When God raises people up and says, I'm going to give my life to this. So often is, well, why don't you do it later in life and get a pension first? Or settle down and you know, you've got responsibilities. Or I face it with my mum, and when my dad was poorly, and now with Alzheimer's, like, should I be closer? And how you know, one of my godparents said to me, you should give up your job and go and care for her. You know, if you count yourself as a Christian, that's what you should do. When it comes from someone close, goodness me, it's powerful, isn't it? But you have to kind of weigh up of actually, the Lord comes first. His call, his purposes, his call upon us in whatever life situation we are, he comes first. I have to be in my Father's house. The gospel is wonderful and true and life-changing, but it's also life-transforming, and that's where it gets pokey and spiky. And makes us go, oh. I hope you're up for that journey. Because we need to ponder it. And we need to live it. Treasure these things. Amen. Henry.